Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hello, Dr. Ray. I'm sure I'm going to get really good advice from you.
Why do I have to be the insightful professional?
Thank you for empowering me.
Here's what I think is going on.
I think you're a hoot and a half.
My idea, my theory, my guidance is a bit of a stretch.
I just love your show.
Does that comfort you?
No.
Am I close?
No. You are really smart.
I am sensitive and understanding and nurturing.
Your show to me is like a comedy information show.
Did I make you feel a lot better or what?
No, you made me feel worse.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
He never says the hometown of Dr. Ray. You ever notice that? I gotta admit, Mother Angelica's a saint. But, I mean, every once in a while you'd think he'd say, and also. But nope, leaves me out. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. This is our Friday version, our most often Friday version. Every once in a while we will take calls, original calls, on Friday because there's a lot of folks who, for whatever the reason, are free on Friday, and I've had them tell me this. You know, hey, can you, you know, you do the look back Friday, which means we can't call in. But right now, we're still sticking with the calls. The way it's set up is certain select calls make the look back roster. Andrew Krucek, what he does is he eradicates my badinage, my persiflage, my banter with the caller, setting up a trusting, fluffy type relationship. Well, he takes care, he gets rid of all that. And then, I think it's part of my endearing sort of personality, but nevertheless, he goes straight to the subject matter of the call. I would like to say much more about the call. I'd like to say much more about any call. But certain ones make themselves more applicable to further comment. And whether that is further comment on a direction, a thought, or further comment on something within the call that was a sidetrack, if I would have gone on that track, or sometimes just generic. We've got actually two calls up here that will be generic comments because one touches on dreams and the other touches upon a personality diagnosis. And I always like to comment on personality diagnoses because they're just sources of confusion for so many people, and they are misused so, so much. If you'd noticed in the opening bumper, one of the things Andrew has me recorded as saying is that my interpretation is a bit of a stretch. Now, one would hear that and think, I'm qualifying what I'm about to say. What I'm going to offer you, my speculation, could really be a reach. I remember where that was taken from. And that was not the context. I'd like to revisit the context. It has always fascinated me when you read pop psychology type theories in women's magazines, family magazines, parenting magazines, child magazines, just the popular media, or if you listen to shrinks on TV. Sometimes they'll say things that raise a skeptical eyebrow. Where are they coming from with that? Why do they think that? What motivated that theory? That observation about the human condition, it just doesn't seem to square with reality. It seems sort of far-fetched. And I've wrestled with that myself, too. I mean, in some respects, two or three of my books are written about things that supposed experts have said that have proved to be a real struggle for parents. Trying to do it the psychologically sophisticated, enlightened way is blown up. And they come to my office frustrated because they've so much attempted to follow the dictates, the recommendations of the latest book they read or the latest article they read, and they're not figuring out why this is not turning out like it was supposed to have turned out. One of the explanations I call the psychological stretch. There is pressure, sometimes subtle, sometimes hard, on supposed expert types. Now, our culture is very expert-driven, and you see this very much during the COVID crisis. The experts say it, therefore it is. And this is particularly true in the soft sciences, psychology, sociology, social work. People with letters after their name. Now, keeping in mind, I went through all those letter accumulating educational years, and I'm here to tell you that an awful lot of what we learned was not really applicable to real life. A lot. It was theory. It was history. It just didn't easily lend itself to helping other people. Nevertheless, our culture affords someone, as a supposed expert, to be above and beyond in understanding of the human condition. I get this all the time. People, in a way to be deferential, and I wish they wouldn't do it, they say things like, well, you know, I have my opinion. Of course, you may or may not agree with this because you're a psychologist. So they sort of qualify it like, well, I'm just an ordinary layperson with my opinion, but you, having all kinds of letters after your name, can decide whether my opinion's got any legitimacy or not. Now, I am not trivializing or downplaying experience. I mean, I've been at this for 40 years. I started when I was in middle school. And Teresa Tomeo at the time was, oh, she'd long since graduated. So, yes, there is something to be said for experience, learning from people, doing a lot of therapy. You form impressions of what works and what doesn't work if you pay attention. Nevertheless, letters after somebody's name don't necessarily indicate an expertise in understanding of the human condition. I've seen a lot of therapists that I can't believe it. For me personally, I'm stunned at the advice that they've given the people. Oh, Dr. A, who do you think you are? Like, your advice is better? No, but the people are coming to my office telling me the advice that they've gotten, attempting to then apply that advice, and it just got ugly. Real ugly. Because the advice just didn't seem to square with reality. But here's my point. And this is getting back to what I was quoted as saying in the bumper introduction. My advice, my interpretation, is a bit of a stretch. If I'm supposed to be smarter than you in the ways of the human psyche, then there's pressure on me to come up with an idea, a notion, a theory that the average layperson would not think of. That in fact, this is above and beyond common sense. This is above and beyond realistic understanding of human behavior. Why? Well, because supposed to be an expert, and I got letters. I got enough letters after my name, I can spell another name. When I was at the mental health center in Columbiana County, I remember one of the administrators of an organization that I was going to do psych evals for. For those of you who are not into the lingo, that's psychological evaluations. And he said, just give it to us straight. Don't use fancy psychological language. We don't need it. We don't need all these interpretations. That's not going to help us. We only have so many options. Give us what you think is the most realistic option for this kid and his family, given what he's done, given the trouble he's in. Okay, I can do that. That's my preference. After a year or two of doing that, it got back to me that this particular administrator said, Rick, he gives us stuff, but really, we want to go deeper. We want to go deeper into the psychological nitty-gritty of how these kids function and what makes them tick. And I thought to myself, I can do that, but what good would that do you? I can cite all kinds of history and in my speculations how that interplays with how the kid is today, but how does that help you? You only have so many options. But you see, he felt the need to somehow explore the psyche of these kids, and he wanted me to do that after having told me a couple years before, don't do that. And that's an example of the pressure. I mean, I have heard when I've said something in an observation about someone's conduct, I've heard, that's it? You're a psychologist. You should know more than that. Oh, yeah, I can speculate more than that for you, but why? In a lot of cases, you just stick with the obvious. You stick with what is. A lot of this is not rocket science. So what happens is, getting back to my original point of this monologue, we stretch. We look to come up with a theory or an idea that you haven't thought of. Nobody's thought of. And as we stretch, the danger is that we lose touch with usefulness. We lose touch with reality. Oh, yeah, man, it sounds really fancy on paper. But you try to do that with a real kid or a real person, and it just falls flat on its face because it isn't linked to reality. Just a small example. Oh, no, never mind. I can't give you a small example because I am way past monologue length. Maybe I'll give you a small example on the other side, but I do want to get into probably now the most common personality diagnoses for adults. I'm Dr. Ray. This is the Dr. Is In. This is Look Back Friday. Thank you for joining me.
On the Dr. Is In.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is the logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world. Did you know that scientific progress owes a debt to Catholic thinking? The crux of scientific discovery is the scientific method, whereby hypotheses are formulated by understanding the order of the universe. If the universe was not ordered but random, as many atheists claim, no logical hypothesis could be derived and no valid experiment could be devised to test the hypothesis. Thus, the Catholic view of a rule-driven universe allows scientific discovery. Today, tell a friend that you appreciate how Catholic thinking has empowered centuries of scientific discovery to improve our lives. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Since he's been off the air, I had to discontinue my Springer guarantee. However, there are enough of these kinds of voyeuristic TV talk shows that we can offer a generic guarantee. You listen to this program, any part of one segment. That's all. It used to be you had to listen to the whole program, but we have really ramped it up. Any part of one segment. And I want to get to the point where it's one sentence. Not there yet. Any part of one segment, and we can guarantee that you or your children will never be on a TV voyeuristic reality talk show. That's pretty broad. Used to be just the Springer guarantee. It's the only show we guaranteed. But we're really attempting to broaden this out. I had a caller once say that her son was on Springer, and I was shocked. And she said, well, he was in the audience. Okay, that's a little different. Here's what happens with psychological diagnoses. Certain ones head into the popular consciousness. They get media play. They get articles written in lay publications. They become a coin of the realm. They become a way to describe someone. Now, for the most part, psychological diagnoses of the personality type, all kinds of, you know, dependent personality, aggressive personality, narcissistic personality, avoidant personality, all of these. There's all kinds of these things. And people think, well, that's a disorder. That is some affliction that hits people. Not really. So there's two directions to go with this call. One is, how does someone decide upon a label like this when they're not a professional? Do they fling it around too easily? And the other is, what does it mean to them? So Kathy from South Dakota is asking a question. Let's find it out.
I am just wondering what creates a narcissistic person. Is it genetics? Is it parenting style? Or, like many things, is it a combination of both?
Well, I would suspect that your question is not a generic question. It is a particular question because it is related to someone close to you that you have trouble dealing with because you think they're pretty self-centered.
Well, it's a former, an ex-family member by marriage. The couple has since divorced because of his narcissistic personality and just making family life miserable and so forth, and it made me wonder what makes that kind of a person. Is it genetics, or did it come from the way he was parented, or, like many things, is it a combination? I don't have to deal with him anymore because he's not at family functions anymore, but it did come to my mind what makes a person become like that.
Well, I'm going to give you the best answer I could ever give you because I think it's the most accurate one. And if you have pencil and paper, I would want you to write this down. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Only God knows.
Only God knows. I got it.
Here's why I say that,
okay.
Kathy. I'm not trying to cheap out on you. But here's what I'm saying. Yes, we are all combinations of our genetic makeup, our predispositions in our wiring, and our experiences. Yes, we all are. And to the degree that those entered into this ex-family member, they're there, and they're very hard to separate out. You'd have to know massive amounts of history. You can't know how he's wired. But I can say this. I personally believe that narcissism and extreme self-centeredness is much higher in our culture, because our culture is a very materialistic, very self-oriented, very entertainment-oriented. It's a culture that feeds a person's wants and needs so very much, unlike any culture in the history of the world. I'll just give you a small stat. Our poorest 20%, the poorest 20% of our culture are materially more well off than the average in other developed countries. They own more. They have more. So we're very, very expectant that things are going to go the way we want them to go. And for some people, they're real vulnerable to that. It's like, I want what I want. I want to do what I want. You're in the way. I'm the most important thing in the world. And some of that is fueled, you're right, by the way we're raised. Absolutely. There's no question about that. Awful lot of kids are not narcissistic, but they're self-centered. They're entitled because they've grown up pretty much very easily. They don't get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to throw wood on the fire burner. They don't have to do that. They don't walk to school. They don't have to walk to school. They drive to school in air-conditioned cars. So much of what our culture allows can create a narcissistic type of personality. I have a friend whose mother was very, very, what's the word I'm looking for? She served them, very much served them, okay? And she did many, many, many things for them. She made their life very nice because she was a very, very giving person. One of the siblings grew up to be kind of selfish and expecting it. The other sibling grew up to serve her. Now, obviously, they were both raised with the same mom, but one of them became much more self-absorbed than the other, who became a servant. So you got to figure there's some kind of wiring involved in cases like that, too. I want to deal with narcissism. Personality diagnoses, much more extreme in general than how they're used in popular language. To get a narcissistic diagnosis, you don't just be self-centered. You got to be extremely self-centered. You got to just not have feelings for others. The whole world revolves around you, and this is your overarching personality style. In many marriages where someone says, I can't take living with that person. Why is that? They're such a narcissist. What they're referring to is the person isn't giving. The person is kind of concerned more about themselves than others. They're not totally self-absorbed, but they're self-absorbed to the point where they're hard to live with. We as humans, and I'm going to have to get this on the other side of the break because I'm going to run out of time. We as humans want to summarize a lot of information in just a word or two. So when we say someone is a narcissist, we assume that other people know what we mean. Because to really go into all of the reasons that we think this person is this way would just involve hours and hours and hours and hours of explanation. It really would if you knew. So we pick a word. We do this with personality traits. Oh, he's an honest guy. And nobody really asks what honest means. And in what situations is he honest? And in what context? And how honest? And how often is he honest? And when is he not honest? How do you define honest? But we say honest. Why? Because that's how we communicate. We summarize it. So somebody in a marriage who is very difficult because they're self-centered or they're not real giving could easily be called a narcissist. But I'm going to touch just a little bit more about that on the other side of the break, and then we'll go to Dorothy's call, who she believes her conversion saved her.
The doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I don't think people should have negative fears of God, but I think you should get a lump in your throat. You should feel excited. Suppose I was going to take you and introduce you to the Pope or to the president of some country or something. You might get a lump in your throat. Forget it. Every day, you, I, live and move and have our being in the presence of God. These are the class of feelings we should have, and we should have them to an intense degree if we really had the sight of Almighty God. These feelings are the feelings which we shall have if we realize His presence, and in proportion as we believe that He is present, we shall have them. And not to have them is not to realize, not to believe that God is present to us.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Man failed the first test of freedom. He refused God's plan of love and chose freely to sin and made himself a slave to sin. That first sin gave mankind the gene or inclination to sin, which has given birth to numerous other sins. The Catholic Catechism reminds us that the exercise of freedom does not imply a right to say or do everything. Man is not totally self-sufficient, and his final goal is not his own self-interest and the enjoyment of earthly goals. When man violates the moral law, he becomes his own prisoner, disrupting neighborly fellowships while rebelling against divine truth. For freedom, Galatians tells us, Christ has set us free. He redeemed us from sin, which held man in bondage. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Thank you for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. The Doctor is In. Our Friday version of The Doctor is In is Look Back Friday. Really a misnomer. It's really Listen Back Friday, but Listen Back just doesn't roll off the tongue as easy as Look Back does. Two single-syllable words. Take previous calls, analyze them with a little more depth, make a few more comments on them. Kathy's call was talking about someone she knew, a relative. Marriage broke up, and this relative was considered narcissistic. And I made some observations about personality diagnoses, and I find that many people just use these personality descriptions. They make their way from the clinical lexicon into the popular lexicon. Narcissism is probably the top right now. That's the one I hear the most. I used to hear psychopath. That's an old term. Then it evolved to sociopath, and now it's conduct disorder, unsocialized, aggressive. Yeah, they keep evolving. Here's the point to make. You don't explain necessarily with a label, particularly a personality label. If I say someone is diabetic, that does explain. It explains certain aspects of their physiology. They have too high of blood sugar in their blood. It's not being absorbed. And we have ways of measuring that by numbers. And we have cutoff points. And we say, okay, according to these cutoff points, this is what happened here. And if this person is a type 1 diabetic, we can say, in saying this person is type 1 diabetic, we understand that the pancreas, the Isles of Langerhans, have ceased to produce insulin. There's no insulin in the bloodstream, or so little it's not measurable. So we explain something when we call someone a diabetic or afflicted with diabetic disease. It's not so easily paralleled when you use personality traits. Because first of all, like Kathy said, what makes someone this way? Well, only God knows. The interactions are so interwoven and so complex. You can't really know all of them. And besides, they are still influenced by ongoing happenings. To say someone is a narcissist and you say, well, here's what happened. He was raised by a mom who indulged him and spoiled him, and he was never held accountable for his conduct, and the whole world revolved around him, and he's now 28 years old, and that's how he sees things. That's the history. What about now? What now is influencing him to act a certain way? Could this person not have a religious conversion and then realize that that level of self-centeredness is not something that our Lord wants in his people at all? Zero? So then what happens to his narcissism? The affliction that he supposedly had goes away. But here's the other problem with it. It's circular. Let's say that I call a child oppositional defiant disorder. Okay, we label that diagnosis on this child. Why'd you label him that way? Well, for the last 3 years, according to parent report, he has managed to defy their wishes on average 7 times a day. He can torment his sister. He can ignore their rules. He can be disrespectful. He can find ways to get around their expectations. Therefore, that is extreme enough, and it's of sufficient duration that we will label that oppositional defiant disorder. Then someone asked the question, why did you label him that? Well, we labeled him that on the basis of his history, and the basis of the frequency of the defiance, on the basis of the intensity of the defiance, on the basis of the pervasiveness of the defiance. Well, then, why is he so defiant? Why does he resist his parents' rules? Why does he challenge them? Why is he disrespectful? I told you, because he's afflicted with oppositional defiant disorder. You see what happens? We take the behavior, we put the label on it, and then we use the label to explain the behavior. We diagnose him ODD because he does all these things. Why does he do all those things? Because he's ODD. We really haven't told ourselves anything. People will come to my office and they will say, the school psychologist has diagnosed our 9-year-old son as oppositional defiant disorder. Will you see him and tell us what you think, Ray? And I will say, well, I'm not so sure how relevant that is to what we have to do. We, as parent, you as the parents, or parent, have to find better ways to deal with this child than you have. Much of what you've been doing has been fueling this. Now, I won't say it that bluntly, not the first session. But I say we have to look at what's going on here and seeing what we can do to improve it. And typically what happens is if the parents cooperate and if they're motivated and they do the kinds of things we talk about, the transformation for them is near miraculous. And then I will ask, do you still think he is oppositional defiant disorder? They will say no. I will ask, what happened to it? Where did it go? If it was a disorder that afflicted him, did we cure it? Did we fix it? Well, yeah, of course, Dr. Ray, everybody knows you can fix disorders. You can work on diabetes with certain types of intervention. True. But the idea that the oppositional defiant disorder what was making him the way he was is not true. What was making him the way he was the dynamics of the discipline between himself and the parents. That's what was doing it. So when we took care of that, at least with some improvement, the ODD was no longer a critical label. It didn't fit anymore. That's the point. All right. When we come back, Dorothy had some questions. She's a convert to the Catholic faith. Talks a little bit about her history, a little bit about what coming to the church has done for her.
Support for Ave Maria programming comes in part by CatholicCounselors.com. Self-help resources and support from Catholic telecounselors from the privacy of home. CatholicCounselors.com, helping your faith, life, and relationships flourish.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Let us strive to know the Lord. Quick question to you and me right now. Is that what you and I are doing every single day? When you and I wake up every day, do we strive to know Jesus or not? In the Old Testament, in the same book of Hosea, a little bit later on, it's in chapter 14, the Lord says through the prophet, "My people perish," or in another translation, "My people are being destroyed because of a lack of knowledge." Not a lack of data. We got tons of data. Not a lack of information. We got a lot of information. Not just about things that are happening in the world. We got a lot of data, a lot of knowledge, a lot of information about God, but not a lot of intimacy with God, not a lot of relationship with God, not a lot of friendship. That's the cry of God's heart. God wants to give himself to us in the incredible gift of friendship, and we're not taking advantage of it.
Call to communion.
Through EWTN Radio, we talk to audiences all over the world. One thing I've found out is everybody in the whole world has the same set of questions. They live the same human life. They all want meaning. They all want love. They all want significance. They want forgiveness. That's the most fascinating thing to me. The same answers work wherever you are throughout the world because we're all children of God.
Called to Communion with Dr. David Anders this afternoon, 2 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Get more information on today's guest and download the program from the Ave Maria Radio website, avemariaradio.net. And when your local radio signal is out of reach, listen live on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Good to have you here. Good to be here. I always wanted a job. I finally got it. Where when people find out what I do, their first response is, "You actually get paid for doing that?" Yeah. With breaks. 4 breaks per hour. Start late, quit early. When I was a bagger at a local grocery store, and our 4-hour shift, we got a 10-minute break. That's what we got for 4 hours. We had to have 6 hours or something to get a half an hour lunch. 10-minute break. So I'd run and get the biggest Hostess ho-ho or ding-dong I could get, stuff it down in the staff lunchroom. 10 minutes. Shoot, I get more than that now just in an hour. And I'm not even packing bags and walking them out to the car. Kathy from South Dakota. No. Dorothy. Dorothy from New York. We just did Kathy. Dorothy from New York. Very happy about her conversion. Wasn't so happy prior to it.
I just left my doctor's office. He said to me, "What happened?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "What is the change in you?" And I laughed with my mask on, and I laughed. I says, what changed in me? I said, I found the Lord. I said, I volunteer. I said, and I said, you see, how's my blood pressure? He goes, amazing. I said, how's my weight? He goes, you lost. I go, how's my lungs? He goes, I'm so impressed. I said, I'm not. I said, that's the power of the Lord. I says, let me tell you what. I was one of these depressed, suicidal, actually, ever since I've been 6 years old. I was one of the youngest suicidal cases in the city of Niagara Falls, New York, for what had happened to me. They said it to me then, and I'm now 60. I've been suicidal for many, many years, and major depression, which they tried major, all kinds of medications. When this pandemic came around and started killing many, many young people with the suicide, for some reason, I grabbed my Bible, I watched the Ten Commandments, and I turned around, and my whole life changed, thanks to the Lord. Because when it changed and I seen so different, and I seen this been going on actually for years and years and years before my time and before many, many others, I turn around and for some reason, and it's because the reason, like I tell people, it's the Almighty God. Because he made me so now I'm not depressed. I'm actually happy.
Well, Dorothy, it took you long enough.
Well, thank you so much. I don't know if that's a compliment or insult.
Well, I'm sure glad. What the heck?
Say, honestly, there is never a time too late, no matter what, because right now I see in the falls so many young people committing suicide at a rate that is phenomenal. And
they don't have meaning. They don't have meaning. They don't have hope. You found meaning. You said, wait a minute. There is a lot more to this life than I've been thinking all these years. Why did it take me so long to think it? God had to hit you with a 2x4.
I'm telling you, he hit me with a bigger than a 2x4. I think he hit me with a brick wall.
With a bazooka. Had to fire a bazooka above your head.
I'm telling you, when people say they don't believe, like I tell them, watch the Ten Commandments. Just watch. You will see all this had happened before. And if they say, well, I don't see God, I said, because you're not looking. God is everywhere, every day of your life when you wake up now. I look out and see the sun. I see the rain like today. I see every single blessing he gives me. He gives me the opportunity to plant a community garden. He gives me the opportunity to see how many hundreds of people stand in line at the Salvation Army and need food. And the smiles on their face when we hand them the baskets. I see so much different. It's not about, oh, poor me. Oh,
Dorothy,
poor what
Dorothy,
happened to me
in my I got
to
tell you, that's a wonderful summary. And you just keep growing in that direction, sweetheart. You just keep growing in that direction so that next time you go see your doctor, he sees the same thing from this woman. He doesn't just think this is some little crazy thing you're going through and that'll pass. There's a dirty little secret of therapy. It's not all that effective. People in our culture view therapy as the answer to pretty much everything. Person struggling, he needs counseling. Marriage is drifting, they need counseling. Kids a problem in school, he needs counseling. Therapy has become the answer to everything. Unfortunately, for it to work, it takes motivation on the part of the person getting the therapy. It takes the ability to generalize from the office to real life. Now, I'm not saying you don't get counseling. Obviously, that's my living. That's what I do. And a good therapist can help a lot. Truly, a good therapist can bring to your awareness an awful lot of things that you hadn't considered and maybe correct a lot of your thinking that's causing you trouble. A good therapist can do these things. But therapy overall, I remember I used to get referrals from the court system. These people were court ordered to come to therapy. It was part of their probation. They were messing up their lives. They were hurting other people. They had spent time in jail, so they could get counseling. Well, they were a very, very low success population, kind of like adolescents. I remember when I first went to the mental health center and I said, I want to work with adolescents. All the other therapists loved me because they had wanted to cease working with adolescents. So what I've experienced is something that Dorothy is talking about, which I have seen dramatic life-changing alterations. Not from therapy necessarily. Religious conversion. So incredibly powerful. That's one very strong piece of evidence for the truth of God's existence, the truth of Christ being God. If the very best minds creating the very best therapies generally have limited success, what is it? What is it about a genuine religious conversion that can turn a life completely around? And you listen to some of these testimonials, these conversion stories, I mean, these people were just so lost. They were within threads of total self-destruction. It's no coincidence that the age group under 35 has the least amount of religion as any group ever surveyed in the history of surveys here in this country. There's no coincidence that that's the way they are, and their suicide level is off the charts. Their suicide level is 6 times any COVID death level. Why? As I said to Dorothy, we've stripped them of meaning. They don't see beyond themselves and their momentary happiness. I better go because I want to get this last one in about dreams. Oh, man. That's the world of psychology, you know, analyzing dreams. And, well, training rats, too. But if you train rats to have dreams, I mean, you are really a psychologist.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
The EWTN home video highlight for October is A Wolf in Sheep's Clothing 2, The Gender Agenda.
For 2 centuries, the ideologues of socialism or communism have used deceptive word jugglery to rebrand themselves as liberals or progressives.
Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call 1-800-854-6316.
Religious freedom and healthcare and the right to life are under the greatest attack in American history. Right now, Catholic healthcare and the pro-life movement hang in the balance. My name is Lewis Brown, Executive Director of the Christ Medicus Foundation, and we are leading a new movement to defend religious freedom and civil rights in healthcare and to build the culture of life. We need your help now more than ever. Join this movement. Go to religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org. That's religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org.
I got enough time here to do one more call. Robin, she's having some bad dreams during this whole COVID thing that is going on and on and on and on.
They just had a show on this thing about dreaming, mm-hmm. and people
wild dreams during the virus time, I call it.
Yeah.
So that I could relate to. I'm having deep dreams, and there's a strong connection between dreaming. If you really dream profound dreams, you really are in your deep REM sleep, and you have a much better day because you thought. So I've always welcomed dreams, welcomed nightmares, because you still get a great night's sleep if you're able to fall into that deep place. So that's what I took from that show. But you always have some amazing insights.
Robin, I did want to address your comment about dreams.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things about a dream is that to recall it, to know that you had a bad dream,
right,
you generally have to wake up during the dream or shortly thereafter. And that's part of the reason why people recall dreams more in the morning, because your sleep shallows up toward morning.
Right.
This could explain why this show was talking about more people dreaming during this COVID situation. Because if they're anxious, if they're unsettled, if their routine has been disrupted, it's likely that a percentage of them are going to have shallower sleep. If they have shallower sleep, they're going to wake up more. And if they wake up more, they're going to recall their dreams more.
Right.
So that might be the relationship there. Interestingly enough, did you hear Robin say that she welcomed her nightmares? Because they indicated to her a more REM sleep, rapid eye movement. If you've ever seen somebody in REM sleep, you can actually see under their lids that their eyeballs are fluttering very quickly. And there are certain other things that happen during rapid eye movement sleep. There's an autonomic storm. Your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, your breathing goes up, your galvanic skin response, which is kind of a measure of the moisture in your skin, goes up. But interesting enough, you know what goes down? Motor control. And some speculation is that that's a body's defense mechanism, protection to keep us from acting out our dreams. Have you ever woken up and had an absolutely paralyzing feeling? You can't move. It's not common, but you wake up and you're thinking, I can't move. I can't move my arm. I can't move my legs. Yeah, you probably woken up during one of those periods, and it passes. You soon be able to move again, but it's frightening, isn't it? What Robin didn't say was the meaning of her nightmares. Is there some relation between distress over the whole COVID situation, which is causing massive amounts of distress throughout the whole culture, or Is it something that, now it's interesting how she chose to interpret it. I'm not scared by it. I welcome it, which is not a response I hear commonly when people have nightmares. They wonder where they're coming from. Why are they having them? Is there some meaning to them? Could they be interpreted? Now, by and large, the interpretation of dreams is not as Sigmund Freud originally postulated. Freud called dreams the royal road to the unconscious. And he believed there were certain universal symbols of dreams, that as you related the dreams to an analyst, a psychoanalyst, they could take those symbols in your dream and they would put the meaning to them, and therefore you could find out what your psychic conflicts are. And that's all nice theory, but it hasn't really been borne out by much in the way of research, and psychoanalysis is really practiced by only a small handful of therapists anymore. The conclusion on symbols for dreams is this. There is meaning, but it's usually individual meaning. Dreams are a patchwork of the day's experiences, the things you're preoccupied with, what has mattered to you in life, and they're just a hodgepodge. The physiological reason for dreams is not well understood. What is going on that this neurological kind of storm is just bouncing all over your brain with all kinds of happenings and scene changings and people who no longer a part of your life or back in your life. And it's just really hard to know, really very hard to know. And there's really not much reason to know. For Freud, there was, because he just thought that's how you understand the psyche and that's how you can cure these conflicts that are destroying this person. But for most of us, a nice exercise maybe, but for the most part, unless it's something that can lead us to understand our awake functioning, it's not a whole lot of meaning. I'm dreaming of tomorrow. Well, no, dreaming of Monday, when I can be with you again. I'm Dr. Ray, and I thank Andy Fuchek for all his editing capably. Walk with God. It's a dream you want to have forever.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.